So conservatives don't say everyone's got to be an eyewitness. But they usually say, here's the rule. I want a text where the person was in the right place at the right time. I would like them to write as soon as possible afterwards, and I would like them to either have been there or to have consulted people who were there. And I won't be able to fill this in for you. You can do it during the Q&A if you want. But you put these things together, archaeology, extra-biblical sources. If you say you have authors who are in the right place at the right time, now you say, everybody admits I have the text. Now the text is looking trustworthy. So third step, I can use this text in constructing New Testament theology or talking about the historical Jesus. Chiefly historical Jesus would be maybe the next move you would make. All right, that's their traditional way. The top down, the umbrella, the trickle down effect. And it's a general argument and it yields general conclusions. One of the weaknesses of this method is because it is a general argument with general conclusions, it's hard to get specific conclusions. It's a little harder to push a certain point. But you can still make this one work. All right, I'm going to suggest a second approach, which I call the minimal facts method. Let me give you the minimal facts argument. I'm being facetious, of course. But a minimal facts argument would be, heads I win, tails you lose. Now here's where I'm going. I want to say, if the first general argument works, let's just take the example of historical Jesus. If the first general argument works, then we knew who the historical Jesus is. Now if you say, nah, I've got some specific objections. I think you can make some good points that way, but I think you're going to lose too many small points. You're going to have some dropouts. With this second example, I'll tell you what. Instead of going the umbrella route, let's use the building blocks method. Here's the minimal facts method. I'm only going to use data that have two characteristics. The main one is I will only use facts, I will only use historical data for which I have multiple attestation. I will only use data for which I have reasons to believe that what this text says is accurate. Now, notice the difference over this and the other argument. The other argument says, well, yeah, you can know that text is true because we know what the text says, we know what the text means, so coming down like the umbrella, what the text says, what the text means, I probably have a good argument there. The strength of the second argument is it starts right on that point. And it says, let me give you three or four reasons why this point is accurate, why this particular point is accurate. And then I'm going to build up. So the first characteristic of every fact I use is that they will be multiply attested, individually attested. And secondly, there will be widespread critical agreement across the board, liberal, conservative, moderate. There'll be a widespread critical agreement across the board that I can make this move. Those are the two characteristics I'm going to use. I'm going to argue specifically for that fact based on one or more credentials. And secondly, critics and conservatives will generally agree as to the meaning of this. All right? Let me give you an objection. And this, when I go to universities or around or my writings, this is probably the question that most people fail to understand. If you're here and you're a skeptic and you debate, I told the group last night I did this for 10 years. I used to debate with Christians. I was going to become a Buddhist and told my mom that. I remember that day. Finished my grad studies, told her I was going to go in that direction. I argued with Christians. I remember two places. I'm from Detroit, and I remember a couple places. One was an inner city situation. I remember two different guys that wanted to fight, both bigger than me. Over my lack of belief in the Bible. When you talk to that kind of person, like I was, when you talk to kind of this village atheist, a village idiot kind of person, or village, whatever you call them, village atheists they're often called, they use an objection like this. Maybe you've heard this. You want me to believe the man? Yeah. The man's in the book? Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I don't believe the book, so therefore I don't believe the man. Huh. I'm not sure where I'm going to go with that. You want me to believe the man. The man's in the book. I reject the book, so I reject the man. What do you say? And usually, now you could just give the whole argument I just gave, but usually the supposition is this. With the village atheist, the armchair critic, usually the supposition is, if it's in this book, which is the New Testament, by the way, if it's in this book, you can't use it. Because this is your book. And it's prejudiced because it's written by Christians. And therefore, get it from somebody else, but don't use this book. Well, I'll make two responses. Okay, fine. Will you believe it if I give it to you from Tacitus? Who's Tacitus? What if I give it to you from Pliny? Would you believe it if I give it to you from Pliny? Two Roman historians who are not Christians. What if I tell you that Josephus said that it was widely believed that Jesus fulfilled prophecy, did miracles, was crucified by Pontius Pilate, and his Christian followers believe that he was raised from the dead? If I tell you that we get that from Josephus, will you believe it? There's a couple paths we can go. One is I did a book years ago called Historical Jesus, and I drew from 18 different non-Christian accounts outside the Bible to put together a life of Christ without ever opening the New Testament. You can go that route. And sometimes the village atheist is impressed with that kind of argument, but that whole argument misses the boat. Very technical skeptics, the kind I debate with when we're arguing in the print. And by the way, these guys are friends. There's no excuse not to be friends. Tony Flew and I have been friends for 20 years. There's no excuse. There's no reason we have to have an adversarial relationship with people we disagree with. None at all. There's a difference between exclusive beliefs and being a jerk in your actions, you know? And you just talk to two physicists, and it depends on whether they take the bootstrap hypothesis or other hypothesis. I mean, I just read an article with 8 competing views of physics. Because I take view 1 and you take view 4, that doesn't mean we can't have coffee or we can't be friends. But if you talk to some of the skeptics, they would never make the move that I just made. They would never say, I'm not going to believe it, it's in this book, go get it somewhere else. They don't do that. They accept whatever is in this book if you have good reasons for accepting it. In other words, they use the building block method. Let me give you 8 different building blocks you can use. And then what you say is, let's use historical Jesus. I'll try to give you an example of each. I'm really going to have to move to finish this up by noon or a few minutes before we go to our Q&A. But let me give you 8 building blocks that you can use to pick the best text. And again, the village atheist, that's not a derogatory term, that's often what they call themselves. The village atheist does not argue, I mean, they will argue if it's in the text, don't use that text, but that's not the way atheistic scholars argue. They'll let you use the text if you have good reasons for accepting that text. I did my doctoral dissertation at Michigan State years ago on the resurrection. Most of the guys on my committee did not believe in the resurrection. Why would they let me do a dissertation on the resurrection? Here's what they said. We don't care if you say the resurrection occurred. Just don't say it happened because the Bible said it happened. In other words, you can use the Bible, but don't use the Bible just because it's the Bible. Give us reasons why you use those texts. They're okay with that. Just give me reasons. Here's 8 building blocks you can use to put a case together. And by the way, you will see an overlap. Not only will critical, if anybody has questions, I will illustrate any of these 8 from ancient historians or from liberal theologians. I'll quote somebody else besides conservatives. But you know, if you're a reporter in almost any discipline, medicine, cancer that's detected early is better than cancer is detected late. In any kind of inductive discipline, early is better. If you're a lawyer, if you're a judge, if you're a medical doctor, if you're, you know, anything, early is better. One thing I want to go for are early texts. Well, somebody tell me, what is the earliest extended report we have in the New Testament that argues for the resurrection of Jesus? I don't mean some isolated verse in an early book. I mean, what is the earliest extended text we have in the New Testament? Anybody want to take a shot? And I don't care whether you use conservative, actually, let's use, quote, liberal dating. Let's use their dates. What's the earliest text we have? Pardon? Biblical. Because they're going to use that too. Pardon? Mark. From about what? That's pretty early. Most critics are going to put Mark about 70 AD. Okay, if 30 is ground zero, if we use 30 for the death of Jesus, Mark is about plus 40. Does that make sense to all of you? 70 minus 30 is 40. Mark's about plus 40. What if I told you that virtually every critic who writes thinks that Paul is the author of 1 Corinthians, and that in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 3 through 8, Paul gives a list, 3 through 7 in particular, Paul gives a list of resurrection appearances that dates from the 30s AD. What if I told you that Paul got this material in 35 AD, approximately, which is plus 5? Gerald O'Collins, a moderate scholar, not liberal, not conservative, Gerald O'Collins, a moderate scholar, says Paul's material in 1 Corinthians 15 dates from 30 AD. In other words, it's plus zero. That's early. That is early. Second rule, eyewitness. Whenever possible, get the material from an eyewitness or somebody who was with an eyewitness, someone who did good research. Good principle, right? If you're a journalist, you want to go to the game, not sit in front of your radio. If you're a judge, you want to get the facts. If you're a criminal attorney, you want to see what's going on before you make your case for or against. If you're a medical doctor, you want to get the facts before you prescribe. It's a very, very common tenet in any kind of inductive study, wherever possible. So what do? We use the texts that are eyewitness. What text do you have that are eyewitness? Most critics do not think that the four Gospels were written by eyewitnesses. Now, you can get around that by using the rules I'm going to use here. But you know who they do grant? The Apostle Paul. And of the 13 epistles that bear Paul's name, critics almost unanimously give you between 6 and 8. And the epistles they give you are the epistles that most Christians want to use. These are the unanimously accepted Pauline books. Romans, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Philippians, 1 Thessalonians, Philemon. Often Colossians. 7 out of 13, and they're the big theological ones that are unanimously given. So you want to use an eyewitness? Or you want to get somebody who was there from the beginning? Go to Paul. That's what the critics would say. Now, if you want to say, wait a minute, I beg to differ with you. Papias says that Peter was the main source behind Mark. Okay, go for it. If you want to make a different case, go for it. But they're going to grant you Paul. You can make a case for the resurrection of Jesus and never use anything except 1 Corinthians 15 and Galatians chapter 1 and 2. And nobody disputes any of those three chapters. In fact, not only can you make a case, it's your best case for the resurrection because it's early and eyewitness. Third rule. You've all heard two heads are better than one. Multiple attestation. We want as many sources as possible. And usually the word independent is there. But isn't that a good principle? Why did your professor give you a C on your paper instead of a B? One reason could be you didn't use enough sources. We still, you know, you're going to put a good piece of research together, get some good data before you start. And the best data are early data, eyewitness data, and multiply attested data. I want to come from different directions and get the same fact. Let me give you two examples. You know that Jesus is the only founder of a world religion whose miracles are reported within a generation? In any kind of holy book, he's the only one whose miracles are reported within a generation. Critics usually think there are five independent sources in the Gospels. I can identify those five for you. Think, wait a minute, five? Do you mean Thomas? No, I'm not talking about Gospels. I'm talking about Gospel traditions in the Gospels. Five traditions in four books. You know how many of those sources say that Jesus is a miracle worker? The Jesus Seminar says if you have two, you have a decent argument. Two out of five. Jesus was a miracle worker. Five sources. How many of these sources say he was a miracle worker? Five out of five. One of the earliest claims that Jesus made is that he was the Son of Man. Contrary to popular opinion, Son of Man is not a title of humanity. Son of Man is a title of divinity. How many sources do you have in the Gospels? How many of them say Jesus claimed he was the Son of Man? That's multiple attestation. 5 out of 5 for the miracle claims, 5 out of 5 for the Son of Man claim.